Do you know what happened 40 years ago today?
Oh.
I do. Hand in the air. I do.
Oh, the Ryan Sandberg game?
Ryan Sandberg game.
Yeah.
What a game.
Ryan Sandberg game.
I had a chance to go to that game, and I didn't go.
What happened?
I got a haircut.
Oh, it's good that you got your priority.
And to this day, I'm made fun of for that.
You had a chance to go to a Cubs game. Of course, you could have never known what was going to happen.
That's right.
But you had the free tickets?
They weren't free. But I had an opportunity. I was invited to go.
I'm going to get a haircut.
I'm going to get a haircut.
Hey, that's right.
And live to regret Schwanny's it.
He's coming in for a haircut today. Hey, I give Schwanny a nice haircut.
And Floyd did not have the Dumont TV on in the barber shop to watch the game.
Oh, no. Either. Floyd didn't have a TV.
He didn't have a TV at all.
You had the good conversation, maybe nice game of checkers.
Yeah. Yep.
There were a couple of really interesting things about that game that don't get talked about a lot. You know, Sandberg obviously gets the credit because he hit the big two home runs off of Bruce Sutter. Willie McGee for the Cardinals hit for the cycle in that game, and no one ever talks about that. And the game-winning run was driven in by a backup shortstop by the name of Davey Owen. He hit a base hit up the middle.
I couldn't remember who actually won the game.
He won. Cubs won it 12-11.
But it was Rhino that tied the game twice.
Twice, yes. Four hits in that game. And the weird part too, in the ninth inning, they were running the credits. NBC was running the credits for the game because they had to get off the air because they had another game coming up. And Bob Costas is saying, "Director is blah blah blah." And boom, there it goes.
That's awesome.
And I tuned into the WGN radio broadcast, and Vince and Lou were in the booth with Harry.
I found Harry's call.
No, it's great. It's iconic.
Of those two iconic home runs, we'll play those later on, but. Very poignant because today Ryan Sandberg is going to get a statue.
Correct.
Outside of Wrigley Field, 3:00.
Very appropriate day to do it.
And I think I heard Bob Costas was coming in to do the ceremony.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
Oh, yeah, cool. A bunch of his teammates were in yesterday. They did the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley. I saw Jody Davis, Bob Dernier, Gary Matthews. Leon Durham.
That's when the Cubs were the Cubs.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That 84 season was great. I mean, I was just about to graduate, actually, was in high school, junior and senior year in high school, expand. And it was it was one of the first good memories I had of the Cubs as a kid, you know? I mean, there was...
Paul Sullivan has a terrific article in the Tribune about how that game turned everything around for the Cubs.
Oh, it did.
And Wrigleyville and the whole legacy of the Chicago Cubs.
And they won the division.
Rhino won the MVP award that year. Rick Sutcliffe won the National League Cy Young Award. And a heralded trade that came a couple of weeks before that game with the Cleveland Indians where they got Sut.
I miss owning the Cubs.
You and me both.
I miss free
you
tickets.
You owned the Cubs,
yeah.
Did you?
Well, we did.
Yeah, we did.
I know. I mean, you made it sound like it was Dean Richards Enterprises that owned the Cubs.
I said we.
We meaning the Tribune Company.
Yeah.
Yes. Those were fun days, yeah.
Yeah. Just call, pick up the phone. Hey, you got a couple of free tickets? Sure.
Go right ahead.
Where do you want to sit?
First baseline?
Yeah, I got two seats in the dugout for you. You can sit next to Jim Fry.
That would have been fun.
Uh-huh.
That would have been great to sit next to Jim or Don Zimmer.
Don Zimmer.
That would have been great.
Don Zimmer, yeah. Who'd pay any money to hear some of those conversations?
Oh, I've heard some of them were recorded afterward.
Yeah. Even better than some of our conversations that we have off the air?
Yeah, off the air, yes. Off the air being the emphasis there. Yeah. Yes.
Well, congratulations to Ryan Sandberg. We'll talk much more about this later on. on what pose will he be in? Will he be holding a bat?
Yeah, they haven't really said. He said he had some input into it, and I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's more known to me as a fielder. Huh. He was a great hitter. Don't get me wrong, but he had errorless streaks that spanned a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And people forget too that his first year with the Cubs in '82, he played third base, and did not hit very well that first year. But they stuck with him, moved him over to second base, and next thing you know, he's an MVP.
I think of him as a hitter.
Yeah, I mean,
I think of this Ryan Sandberg game, but
yeah.
I think of him also 8-8-88.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sliding on the tarp.
And I believe he had one season that he was totally errorless. A season and a half or something like that, as a second baseman.
He had a long errorless streak, and he at one point had the most home runs by a second baseman in big league ball. But yeah, I still kind of see him as that fielder with the jump throw trying to turn the double play from second base.
Yeah.
But yeah, because Santo's in there as a third baseman, as a fielder. His statue is a fielder. Ernie Banks is a statue of a hitter. Billy Williams is him hitting as well. Fergie, of course, is him pitching.
Yeah.
And Harry is going crazy in center field with the microphone out and fans coming out of the
Harry's statue. Harry's statue always scared me a little bit. It was like you just got done rubbing a magic lamp and Harry appeared on the lamp.
You know, I have to say, there's a picture of Harry in the Baseball Hall of Fame at Cooperstown. They have a whole section devoted to the media there.
Yep. Well, the Fort Frick
and winners. That they need to get a better picture of him. It does not do him justice. Mm. I think it's very unflattering, to say the least.
I've already put into WGN management for a statue of Schwanee.
To be out doing what?
Out in front of our building. It would be a statue of you eating a sweet roll with the caption, "I've got a newsroom to run." Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks, Soldier Field the other night. Sold out Soldier Field. How about that? They sang "Stop Dragging My Heart Around" together. Fortunately, did not go to the show. I had a previous engagement. Or as Schwanee likes to say, I had to get a haircut.
I had to get a haircut.
Couldn't go see Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks. I had to get a haircut if I had hair.
I wasn't going to say anything.
I'll bet that was an amazing show, though. Because and everybody's telling me it was great. Billy Joel does all his hits. Stevie Nicks does all of her hits and Fleetwood Mac hits. They do a couple of tunes together. 4 hours.
Wow.
Was it 4 hours?
4 hour show.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. And then the Justin Timberlake was the night. Was it the night before? Yeah, Friday night.
Friday night at the United Center, I think?
At the United Center, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the United Center. And everybody's telling me that that was a great show and that he talked a little bit about his issues that he had this week
during the show he brought it up.
Well, he brought up he appreciates people's support, and he didn't talk specifically about the alleged DWI, but he referred to it for the first time. He had not said a word up until that, but he did address it. How do you not, right?
Yeah,
it's the 800 pound elephant in the room. Got to say something, but he'll be back in the Hamptons July 26th for a court hearing on all of that. So it's been a really nice weekend. We've got all kinds of things going on. We had Swedish Days going on, Taste of Highland Park going on, Three Dog Night. Schwanee was at River's Edge Park in Aurora. What's your favorite Three Dog Night song? Jeremiah was a
boy. I like all their stuff. I have a number of favorite Three Dog Night songs. I like One Man Band. Remember that one?
I just want to be
your one man band. Yeah. One is the Loneliest Number. That's a good song.
Love their song, Out in the Country.
Out in the Country. Terrific song.
Oh, I love that. That's a good driving song.
I have the 45.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Do you have a record player?
Yes, I do.
An actual vinyl record
player? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. It can play 78s,
too. Is it hooked up?
It's hooked up.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I have one. It's not hooked up.
No, it's hooked up.
I found my... I'm trying to declutter right now, so I'm going through
a never-ending battle at my place.
A lot of old junk of why am I... I'm doing a lot of why am I keeping this right now? And I ran into my... I ran into my 8-track player, which was in a closet. I ran into my cassette player.
I had a friend who had an 8-track recorder, so he could make 8-tracks.
Same. Bought it at Pacific Stereo.
Oh nice. Yes.
Remember that?
Remember that place? Yes. Sure do.
I got my cassette player, my stereo receiver, Marantz stereo receiver.
What was the model number?
Couldn't tell you.
Oh, do you have a Marantz 10B?
Okay.
368-2?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, baby. Talk serial numbers to me. I ran into a lot of my old junk, so I've decided I'm getting rid of stuff in my old age.
You say you have a turntable, but it's not hooked up.
Yeah, and I
do. You have records?
I have a few.
Vinyl?
I have a few.
You have a few.
The last time that I moved, I donated almost all of them to, I don't know who I donated them to, but I know that my nephews were very upset that I gave away almost all my vinyl.
Mm. Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, because
that hurts.
The then 20-year-olds were like, oh man, vinyl is so cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, good, you move them.
Yeah.
I've moved these things around so many times.
In the crates?
Yeah, in milk crates.
Yeah.
Yeah, old milk crates. Mm-hmm. Old milk crates that I'd stolen from...
A&P when you worked there?
Probably.
Peeling potatoes?
Probably. from the thousands of albums that I have stolen from radio
from
stations.
From radio stations, yes.
I paid for
that. They had the big white labels for promotional use only.
Yeah, you go through my
house. That's not a giveaway.
I've paid for very few things that are in my house. Almost everything was promotional. And now I've decided, why am I keeping this?
Furniture.
You know what I found in my office? I found an Etch-A-Sketch.
Oh, man.
What?
In working condition?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. And I played with it for a minute. It's like, why am I keeping this? This is stupid.
Oh, I would have.
Those things were awesome.
I would have held on to that. I don't know. Mine was lost who knows when, how many years
ago.
You
want to buy it?
He'll give you a great deal.
Give you a good price.
How much?
$500.
No.
Shouldn't have told me how much you liked it. Don't you know how to negotiate?
$5, but $500? No.
Come on, this was stolen from a very fine radio station many years ago.
Now, if you found a Light Bright, I'd be in on that.
Yeah, I don't have a Light Bright.
Light Bright was awesome.
I don't think, but I'm finding all kinds of... turns out I have a lot of smooth jazz memorabilia.
Yeah, a lava lamp and a black light poster?
I do have a lava lamp.
Do you?
I do have a lava lamp. And I may or may not get rid of it. I haven't decided yet. Yeah, I'm paring down, trying to minimalize, you know. I've gotten too much junk. You know what I mean?
Well, we all do, really. I've got so much stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? You get overwhelmed with it, and you don't know where to start.
Well, you get, you know, sentimental.
Very much so.
You get sentimental.
Very much so, yes.
Like, oh, this is nice. Oh, look at this. Why am I keeping this?
And then you put it away and never see it again.
What is the purpose of this?
Yeah, when we moved, during my DJ days, it was CDs, and I was the promotions director as well at the radio station I worked at. So I had a key to the cabinet, and a lot of us would do DJing work on the side, so we'd all at least get one copy of everything.
Yeah, let's get the bride and groom up on the dance floor.
Exactly. I must have had 600, 700 CDs.
Yep.
And they were in these big boxes that were impossible to move because they were so heavy.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, you know what? I've got this Apple Music thing.
Right.
Which is a lot easier to carry on my laptop. But then I struggled because there were some CDs that I went out of my way to try to find
right.
back in the day.
I'm with you.
And I did hang on to a couple, but not the majority of them are gone.
That's going to be one of my next projects because I have quite a few CDs that I've accumulated over the years.
Yeah.
And what did you wind up doing with them? Donating?
Well, there was an app that it was called Declutter, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
And that's what I need.
Yeah, and they give you, they don't give you a great prices on it, but you scan the barcodes and you send it to them and they send you money.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's spelled weird. It's not like Declutter, it's like LTR or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, with a K instead of a C.
Something like that. But I had some good luck on that one.
Yeah, I got a lot of Kenny G CDs.
You do not.
I do.
Why not? He's Mr. Smooth Jazz.
Smooth Jazz, yeah.
I spent the worst 3 years of my life over there. Not that I'm still
bitter. Do you have any George Winston piano CDs? Yeah,
probably.
Okay.
Not that I'm still bitter about it 30 years later.
No, not you.
Oh, be silly. We've got a good show today. We've got Dr. Silver, who's going to be on with us in a few minutes, The Week in Health. But three-time Emmy winner Laurie Metcalf is in a new play over at the Steppenwolf Theater. She joins us on the show today. We go back into the archive for a conversation we had with Donald Sutherland, who passed away this week. And Oscar, Grammy, and Emmy winner Common joining us today to talk about his upcoming concert with the Grant Park Symphony Orchestra at Millennium Park. All of that and more is on the way. You're going to enjoy this giveaway that we've got over the next several weeks here. It is 66 days of giveaways celebrating Route 66, sponsored by Enjoy Illinois and the first 100 miles of Route 66, fueled by Heritage Corridors Destination. How many times have you motored west on Route 66? Do you say Route 66 or Route 66?
Either way is correct.
I like to say Route.
Route 66.
Route is something underneath a plant.
How many times have I motored west all the way? Twice.
Have you ever motored west?
But when I was a boy going
get your
down.
Kicks on Route 66. Sorry.
Are you done there?
Probably not.
Okay. When I was a boy, though, when Route 66 was a real highway, we would drive it headed to near St. Louis to visit my mother's family.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I haven't done it in a long time. It's something I would like to do. That would really be fun.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Now through August 24th, the Illinois Office of Tourism, the first 100 miles of Route 66, Heritage Corridor Destinations, and WGN Radio are giving you a chance to win daily prizes valued at $200. And all you have to do is tune in when we tell you to tune in to win some incredible prizes to celebrate the nostalgic adventures to be had along the first 100 miles of historic Route 66. So, right now, for example, I have a $100 gift card to Prairie Bluff Golf Course provided by the City of Crest Hill and a $100 ExxonMobil gift card to fuel your adventures on the first 100 miles of Route 66. And all you have to do is be caller 6 to win right now. Caller 6 on our contest line, which is 312-981-7200. Caller 6 is going to be our winner, but right now, Dave King Cole Schwann.
Reference to Nat King Cole and Route 66.
Thank you very much for explaining.
Trivia question. Who wrote the tune, Route 66? Mm. Who wrote it?
Mm. Mel Torme?
Nope. Although he did an amazing version of it, just like Nat King Cole. No, it was a guy by the name of Bobby Troup.
Bobby Troup.
Bobby Troup, who was a songwriter and an actor.
Hmm.
But I have to tell you, I am amazed that we had this ad coinciding with the far-flung forecast because the subject is Route 66.
Well, you know,
this show is meticulously
rehearsed every Sunday to make it sound as sloppy as it winds up sounding.
I enjoy the table reads on Thursdays.
Right. We go through dress rehearsal on Friday, and then we actually do the show.
It's interesting that we have table reads on Thursdays. None of us are ever here for it.
It's okay.
I'm very busy.
Virtual.
And I have a newsroom to run. Yes, so, you do. You know. But seriously, our destination is along Route 66. So friends and neighbors, get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices because we're headed way out west, and I mean way out west, to Amboy, California.
Amboy, you
said. Amboy. Hmm. Population, zero.
What?
Zero. Amboy, California was first settled in 1858, and in the late 1880s, it was a stop for the railroad. It's in the middle of the Mojave Desert.
Sounds nice.
And I'm telling you, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Let me get my travel agent on the phone.
What's a travel agent, Uncle Dean? But Amboy is west of Needles, California, and seriously, if you are driving this section of Route 66, it's as desolate as you can imagine. There is nothing out there. But the town was, you know, there were some things going on in the 20th century there. A small, very, very small location on 66. It had a school, as a matter of fact, and a couple of other businesses, including Roy's Motel, the structure of which is still standing.
Not the Roy's Motel.
The Roy's Motel. Huh. The one and only Roy's Motel. Now, it's interesting, and I bring up Amboy because a couple weeks ago I saw an article online about it. A gentleman by the name of Kyle Okura actually inherited the town. His father was the owner of a chain of chicken restaurants in the Western California and bought Amboy for about $400,000 a number of years back. Kyle's father passed away, and he inherited the town, and he is now trying to, and has really restored Roy's motel and cafe, trying to make it a destination. And hopefully it will be, you know, much more popular in a couple of years, because 2026 is the 100th anniversary of Route 66. Mm. So this coincides beautifully with what you did. You had this plan, didn't you, Dean? With the ad that you just read.
We plan everything on the show. Nothing happens by mistake on this show.
But I've been to Amboy twice. And
of course you'd go.
I have.
Of course you'd go someplace where nobody is.
And I'm going to send a couple pictures that I took to producer Jack so we can put them up on the website for Amboy, California, where it is now 92 degrees. And we talk about this heat wave hitting the country. They're expecting a high there of 110 today.
But it'll feel like 108.
But it's going to be a dry heat.
It's a dry heat. It's very pleasant. And time for the weekend health. See if we can get some good information out to you this week, like we always do, with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning to you, Dean. How are you?
Doing very well. So I was reading an article this morning of how there is testing that is going on for the bird flu right now. I thought we were done with bird flu years ago. Can you bring us up to date on what it is, number one? What's going on? Are we expecting, something with going on related to bird flu?
Dean, bird flu is for the birds. That's really my take on all this.
Yes.
It's a virus. It's an influenza virus that currently comes from birds. Is spread by birds, but is now affecting a variety of animals. Most people are aware that it started in dairy cows, but has spread to skunks and mountain lions and even cats. There is no human-to-human spread that is known at this point in time, which is a great thing. Right now, there's only four people that have contracted it, and it's all been from the exposure to the cattle, and one person was exposed to poultry, but that was back in 2022. So you're talking four cases in 3 years. But I think we're now kind of surveilling for that human-to-human spread, and hopefully it doesn't occur. But these sorts of viruses are mutating constantly in our midst, and this is why we have agencies like the CDC that are doing the testing and keeping an eye on things.
So I'm a little concerned when you say that it can be spread through cattle, because we have, we humans have a lot of interaction in terms of the ingestion of cattle in many different ways, not only in eating the meat, but through milk, et cetera, milk which is pasteurized. Does bird flu stand up to pasteurization, let's start off with?
It does not. So pasteurized milk is safe. It kills bacteria and viruses. Now, unpasteurized milk is a horse of a different color, so to speak.
Cow of a different color, so, yeah, right.
but not good kind. So I would not be drinking milk on a farm that just came from the cow. I think, in the old days we did that. I know I've done it in my childhood. And it was always thought to be, safe and natural. But in today's day and age, it's just not advisable. You mentioned meat, cooking beef, to an internal temperature of 160 if it's ground beef, and then whole cuts of beef, really the recommendation is 145 degrees. And then certainly poultry needs to be cooked all the way through to 165 degrees Fahrenheit.
Now, is this something that we should be concerned with when we see, these beautiful flocks of birds that are, then we're like, oh, look how nice they are. We see birds in the backyard and, oh, look how pretty they are. I mean, is that how this is being spread?
My understanding is that it's birds in close proximity to each other, like, flocks of chicken that are living in cages, and viruses can spread avidly in those populations. But I'll be perfectly honest. When I look out and I see the nice robin sitting on my front yard, I have no idea. Because they're carriers of the virus doesn't mean that they're infected, and so you'd have no way of knowing. But I think, just a rule of thumb is, just keep your distance from wild animals.
Yeah.
Now, the people that are contracting bird flu from birds are, places like Southeast Asia, where it's not uncommon, to kind of have chickens walking in and out of the home. It's just the different standard of living.
Right.
And in those scenarios, I think I would want to advise caution.
Okay. Now, the fact that poultry now is affected, also, similar types of questions for the ingestion of chickens, eggs, et cetera, should humans be careful when taking all of that in with this bird flu opportunity, which is out there right now?
Yeah, so I think, my understanding is most eggs at the supermarket are pasteurized. But again, back to the farm, fresh eggs, and whether or not those are safe, I'm not certain that I would venture there right now at this point in time, just me personally.
No.
But I have, maybe a lower risk threshold than most given my job vocation. But eggs at the supermarket, meat that's fully cooked is not going to be, an issue for folks.
Yeah,
and again, I would just emphasize that the people that have gotten infected, they're working, they're breathing in the droplets of, moisture from the cows. They're right in proximity, right in front of the cow's face. And they're breathing back and forth the same air. So if the cow is infected, it's just only expected that a certain number of people would also become infected. And by the way, we know of three people, and they all recovered, incidentally. There was a death in Mexico. It was a totally different strain of bird flu that we're seeing here in the United States. So totally unrelated. So nobody's died. And that, my question is, how many people have had it they've quote unquote been infected but had zero symptoms,
mm-hmm.
probably a larger number. So I think at this point, you know, there's no need for panic. But I think it just underscores the importance of having these public health networks in place so that we can continue to monitor for these things.
What are the symptoms for this? If somebody, you know, may have somehow become exposed, is it like any other virus, like a flu virus or a COVID or something like that?
It is. Because it's an influenza virus, you know, it's H5N1. The H and the N just signify proteins on the virus. And so that's how the scientists kind of the taxonomy of the diseases. So every kind of flu gets its own coding system. But yes, fever, cough, fatigue, muscle aches, sore throat, runny nose. With the bird flu, specifically this strain, there was information that made us think that conjunctivitis might be a leading symptom. So I think all of the people that had it had some form of conjunctivitis. So, you know, typical viral symptoms.
And what should somebody do if they're experiencing symptoms like this? See a doctor? Wait it out?
Yeah.
What's the best to do?
I think the best thing to do is, you know, if you're an adult and you develop conjunctivitis, you know, I would go get that looked at. Particularly, you know, if let's say you went in and did a petting zoo, for instance, and then you started feeling sick. So, you know, think about the exposure and then talk to your doctor. And, of course, if you have any concerning symptoms, either talk to your doctor or come see us in the emergency room. We're happy to take a look at you.
Now, you know, maybe most people know. I don't think I do. What is conjunctivitis?
It's an irritation of the tissues around the front of the eye that kind of line the underside of the eyelid. It's kind of if you pull down your eyelid and you see that red, moist tissue,
yeah.
That's the conjunctiva. And it's just a protective layer of cells that helps kind of keep out viruses and bacteria from getting deep into the eye. And so it's one of the first structures to become infected in certain viruses and bacteria, of course. And so the symptoms would be redness, itching, burning, maybe blurred vision in both eyes, and certainly discharge, usually clear discharge, but sometimes yellow or green and gunky, kind of that gunky, wet, moist, pussy stuff that can develop in your eyes, kind of beyond the typical morning crust,
right.
Would be signs of conjunctivitis.
I love when you use medical terms like gunky. 9:51 more with Dr. Jeremy Silver in a minute. 9:53, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Coming up later in the show, 3-time Emmy winner Laurie Metcalf talking with me about her new play at Steppenwolf. Go to an archived interview with the Donald Sutherland later on. Right now, Dr. Jeremy Silver from Kishwaukee Hospital, The Week in Health. Doctor, we were talking at the beginning of the program how Ryan Sandberg, Cubs legend, Baseball Hall of Famer, is going to be honored at Wrigley Field today with a statue. Today is the 40th anniversary of the famous Ryan Sandberg Day. It all coincides with Rhino completing cancer treatment. In January, he disclosed that he was battling metastatic prostate cancer. He has completed his chemotherapy. Can you tell us a little bit about metastatic prostate cancer? I know metastatic means that it spreads, right? And, you know, you don't want to hear that with cancer.
No, certainly not. Although prostate cancer, of all the cancers, it's one of the ones where if you're told that you have it, you're probably thinking, okay, I got a decent shot at getting through this. And my understanding is that he is currently cancer-free, which is outstanding. So the prostate is, you know, a tiny little gland the size of a walnut that basically is the WD-40 of the male reproductive system. It generates lubricant. And, you know, as we get older, as men get older, generally over 50, but between 55 and 69 is the sweet spot for diagnosis, we're more likely to develop these cancers. And a majority of prostate cancer is a slow-growing, easily treatable variety. And many folks, you know, even 15 years after initial diagnosis, are still doing quite well.
Is that the treatment where they would put pellets into the prostate to treat it, like right on top of where the cancer was found?
Yes, there's a variety of treatments for prostate cancer. You know, there's hormone therapy where you target the testosterone production, which helps the cancer grow, and so blocking testosterone then blocks the cancer. There's robotic surgery. There's radiation therapy, as you mentioned, where they do put radioactive seeds in the prostate that locally kills the cancer without destroying the other organs. And then there's other radiation delivery techniques where they can shoot a stream of protons at the cancer or x-rays even. There's just a variety of ways of going after it in a targeted fashion.
Yeah. Are certain men more likely to get prostate cancer than others?
Yes. So, you know, again, the over 50 crowd automatically raises the risk, as I mentioned. It's more common in African-American men than other races. It's more common in folks that have a family history of prostate cancer. So if your dad had it or your brother had it, that makes it more likely. And then diet is a big one. So, you know, eating lots of unhealthy foods and processed foods are thought to potentially contribute to it. And then obesity, so being overweight, is a risk factor.
All right. Something to be aware of. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Hope you have a great Sunday, Doc. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Dean. Take care.
We've been talking about Shawnee, who is going to be the Grand Marshal of the Skokie 4th of July Parade. When is that again?
July 4th. When is it again?
I found some perfect music to play as you are being paraded down the streets. I'll share that in a minute.
All right.
But I love that our listeners are also getting involved in this. Somebody had sent in some memes of you in the parade.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they took a photograph of Snoopy in the Macy's parade and put your head on Snoopy's head. Is that how you're going to go down the street?
No.
They took a picture of Prince Charles and Diana and put your head on Diana's head.
Oh, no.
So it's you and Prince Charles.
Be with royalty then.
Yeah. So I love that people are getting into the spirit of it all.
Me too. It's fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm ready to go.
Well, we're going to learn much more about it in just a moment. With the executive director of the Skokie 4th of July Parade joins us in just a few minutes.
Alan is here. It's a pleasure to have him here. We've been commiserating on the phone and meeting about this and looking forward to it. Great to have him in the station today.
Yeah, we're just wondering how we're going to fill you up with helium and get you down the streets for the whole thing. So on the 4th of July, Dave Schwann, a.k.a. Schwanny, will be the Grand Marshal of the Skokie 4th of July Parade. And this is the music that I would like them to play as you are being sashayed down the street. And I picture you dressed up like the Statue of Liberty.
With the torch and the whole bit.
The
whole
sparklers bit. At the top, yep.
Whole bit. Green skin dye. So, you know, it's very realistic. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's fine.
I think it's going to be a fantastic spectacle.
Very much looking forward to it.
Are you excited?
Yes, I'm excited. Yeah. I certainly am.
Of course you are.
Definitely. It was an honor to be asked.
How have you been preparing for this now?
I have a shirt to wear.
Well, I would hope you're not going to do this topless.
Oh, boy.
Now, that's why I suggested the Statue of Liberty
costume. The shirt is emblazoned with the WGN logo. Mm-hmm. And actually, in preparation, I've been talking with our special guest that we have in the studio with
yes.
you today.
Yes, indeed. Who is his name is Alan Gertzner. He's the executive director of the Skokie 4th of July Parade. Alan, welcome. Nice to have you here with us today.
Dean, it's a pleasure being with you.
Hang on one second. Try it now.
Okay.
There
Dean,
we go. All right.
Pleasure being with you.
Yes.
I'm actually the past chairman.
Past chairman.
Of the Skokie Parade. I am supposed to be my last year when COVID hit. And we had to cancel the parade. We canceled the parade for 2 years. And I was moving out of town, but that did not stop me. I still doing work for the parade, doing all the electronic stuff, the registration, yeah. putting the parade together. And Schwani's actually going to be in a convertible.
Oh,
he's going to have a sign on the side. It's going to say Dave Schwan, WGN Radio.
Very nice.
And a great big banner they're walking in front with. So,
look at you, Schwani.
Yeah, he's going to be a big time.
Are you going to have extra security? Because
oh yeah, we'll
have. You haven't really experienced Schwani out in public. It's a lot like when Taylor Swift is out in public. Similar kind of reaction.
Well, one of the things they're going to make sure is to not tell you where the parade route's going to be, because you.
what do you mean?
Well, because you've been saying that you've been.
You want people to come and see the parade,
but I do. But with you, they're
just.
Talking
don't want
about
me.
Throwing rotten tomatoes and
you
yelling.
You just don't want me at the parade. Nice.
So,
nice.
Well, if you want to come to the parade, Dean, I have a special seat for you. Just let me know.
This is Schwani's day. This is Schwani's day. So, Alan, tell us now, what is the parade route?
So
where's it going to start? Where's it going to go?
Where's
it going to finish?
So it starts at the Oakton College on Lincoln Avenue in Skokie. That's our staging area. And it steps off there. It goes down Lincoln Avenue to Oakton Street, makes a turn onto Oakton Street, heads east on Oakton Street toward Oakton Park. The reviewing stand is Oakton Park, and the parade ends after. It's a little over a mile. The total route, it is lined with people, that entire route there. We have good crowds that come to see the parade.
It's a big family thing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I've gone a couple of times, and in the past, people come with their lawn chairs, families, generations. I mean, it's tradition for people in that area to come out and enjoy the parade.
It actually is. The families love it, and it was a tradition for my kids growing up that we took them to the parade, and I was with the parade, well, it'll be 35 years now.
Oh, wow.
So they got to ride in the parade, and the really great part was in 2018, one of my grandkids came to the parade. They were living in California. They came to the parade, and my oldest grandson got to ride in the fire truck with the Skokie Fire Department.
How exciting is that?
And that was the biggest.
I would be excited to do that now.
Yeah.
To ride in a fire truck. Are you kidding me? That would be fantastic.
And my son-in-law got to ride with him, and he says, boy, Al, I've never ridden in a fire truck before. That was really cool.
Of course it is. Of course. Now, Andy Mazur, in our sports department, is also here today. Andy, go down your Skokie history in your family. Because really, if I mean, you know, nothing against Schwani or anything, but...
No, of course not.
Andy has got the Skokie credentials here.
Yeah, it all started way back even before my mom was born, that my grandparents lived in Skokie, Karlov and Jarvis. My mom grew up in Skokie, along with my uncle. I was born in Skokie. At I don't know what the name of the hospital is now. I think it's Rush or something like that. It was called Skokie Valley Hospital at that point. And then our first apartment when I was born was at Gross Point in Church.
See? So you've got, you know...
And I like to play nine holes at Weber Park.
Yeah. practically a native there.
Well, he's got to come to see the parade.
Oh, yeah. I think next year it should
be called... He can ride in the car.
I think next year it should be called the Andy Mazur Parade, really.
I don't know about
that. I'm pushing
that.
For that next year.
I don't know
well,
if I want that
come,
pressure.
Well, you going to come, Andy?
Well, if I can get out of here quick enough, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'll be here in the morning.
Yeah, it starts at noon. We'll have a special space for you. Just
nice.
Let me know.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to sit with Schwani.
No.
You don't want that. You definitely don't want that. Now, let me ask you, Alan, how many people turned you down before you finally had to go to Schwani? Is it more or
bottom
less?
Of the
is
a barrel?
Trick
is
question.
That what you're implying?
Plus
yes.
or minus
it's
20 people
question.
That turned
you.
Turn
do not
you.
Have to answer this, Alan.
I can tell you who's in the parade. How's that?
Well, all right. Well, what else will people see in the parade?
Well, yes. We've got Jesse White, which is always a big deal.
Of course.
Everybody loves the Jesse White tumblers, and they come to the reviewing stand and they do their big thing. But they do it. They do their tumbling all the way down the route. We've got a number of large bands. We got the Chicago Pipe Band, which is the bagpipe band, which is a big crowd pleaser all the time. We have a thing in Skokie called the Festival of Cultures that happens in May. It's at Oakden Park. And we take a number of the groups that are on the main stage for the Festival of Cultures, and they then perform in the parade. So you'll see them also in the parade, dancers, singers. And this year, the Skokie, the winner of the Skokie Idol at the Skokie Theater is going to be singing our national anthem this year.
Very nice. Very nice.
So
it's marching bands and you know, all the usual kind of parade fun, right?
Absolutely. And we have from America's Got Talent, those funny little people will be there too.
Fun. Yeah.
So for many years, Roger Badage was our MC, and he retired 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He retired. But Roger and I are good friends. We keep up, and he said it'll always be a soft spot in his heart.
Of course.
For the Skokie Parade. He was great.
Yeah, of course.
He was wonderful. He always did a picture with the funny little people that we have up on the website.
Well, Schwani will be available for all kinds of pictures with little people.
Well, he's going to have to kiss the little people on there, and we'll take a picture and we'll put that up too.
Schwani?
Will you do that for me, Schwani?
Of course.
Yep. You know, I had another idea for, you know, so you could be interactive with some of the other participants in the parade. You're talking about the Jesse White tumblers in the parade. How great would that be if you went through some of the motions with the Jesse White tumblers, Schwani?
I would break every bone in my body trying to do what they do. They are amazing. I'll just do like a somersault or just roll along the
You'd break every bone in your body if you did a somersault. What are you talking about?
I would. Yeah. How about you?
What do you mean?
How about you being one of the Jesse White tumblers?
I'm not. This is your parade. This is your deal.
Well, you're determined to be there, so, you know. Just...
Only to cheer you on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. To cheer me on. Help, Alan.
Alan, what kind of advice would you give Schwani, you know, to be the, to make a successful grand marshal appearance?
Well, he's got to make sure that he waves properly when he's going down the street in the convertible, because there's going to be a lot of people there with signs that are holding up that say hooray Schwani,
welcome Schwani.
right so he's right. You know, he's got to wave like the Queen used to wave.
Yeah
Oh, the little formal
correct yes, just
from the
like
wrist
that.
From the wrist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
and blow kisses to your fans. And we want to make sure that there's thousands of people that come out just to see Schwani.
Yep.
And you will keep Dean. You have a special place for Dean.
Oh, we have a special place for Dean.
Yeah, they've notified all the security people.
Homeland Security has his name.
They have a picture of a bald guy with a red line through it to be on the lookout for. So I'll be in costume. I'll be like a fake mustache and wig and all.
Are you going to be with the Shriners clown unit?
Might be. I'm not. I don't think I need to reveal that right now. Exactly. So give us all the details, Alan, of the parade. Oh, you know what? Somebody texted in. Where is the best place to park if I'm coming to the Skokie Parade?
That's a great question. You can park on any of the side streets along the parade route, but get there early because they start closing the streets down at about 11:15.
Okay.
So if you get there 11 o'clock, which a lot of people do because they want the best spot and put their chairs out, any of the streets along that route, and if you go to our website, which is Skokie4th.org, it's got the parade route there so they can see exactly where the parade starts and ends. Park along any of those streets. There's parking there. It's not a no parking zone there. Around the parade, down Oakton and Lincoln, that's all closed off. You can't get in and out. So come early. Get there by 11:15 to get a good parking space and get yourself settled in. Make sure you bring like a shade umbrella and water to keep yourself hydrated. The parade is about 2 hours. It should be over by 2 o'clock. And we're going to have a great... there's going to be 80 units in the parade this year.
Nice.
So there's something for everybody, and one of the big crowd pleasers is our Uncle Sam on stilts, and everybody loves him.
Oh, how American can you get?
Schwani on stilts.
That would be a sight.
Schwani on stilts would be fantastic.
Would you do that for me, Dave?
Now I really have to practice.
Schwani on stilts. I will make a personal donation to the parade if we can get Schwani up on stilts. I don't appreciate somebody on the text line suggesting that my seat should be a dunk tank seat.
Oh, I appreciate it.
It's not nice. I'm just trying to help my friend here.
We see you on there. You wanted to ride on the truck. I can see you wearing a fire helmet. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, dunked in the pool with the helmet on.
Probably be very refreshing if we're going to have weather like we've had the last couple of days. I wouldn't mind that exactly. Are there any restrictions on what you can bring to the parade? Sadly, these days, you know, we're a little more careful with, you know, attending public events like this. Is there anything that people cannot bring to the parade?
There's no main entrance, so we can't screen anything. There will be a tremendous police presence since the Highland Park parade. So we do have a heightened police presence there. They will be walking up and down the parade route on it. You can bring backpacks and things like that. Some places you can't.
Coolers
you can bring.
Things like that are all fine. Water, et cetera.
Correct. People kind of find their space. Families. You'll see a lot of families sitting down with their coolers and their lawn chairs and waving their American flags.
All right. And Schwani, the Grand Marshal, will be leading the parade, correct?
He will be at the beginning after the police and the fire trucks. Then comes the Grand Marshal with the mayor. So he'll be in a car. Let's see, where's the mayor? I'm looking right now. See where the mayor is. Okay, mayor's right after Schwani.
Wow.
We've got the police color guard, then the police department, and then all the fire trucks.
Yeah.
And then Schwani. And then
on stilts.
Mayor Van Dusen is next.
So. On stilts and wearing the Statue of Liberty costume.
Well, that's going to be fantastic.
You got to be on your best behavior there, Schwani.
Oh, because, I will. I will.
You know, you're in front of the mayor there.
Yeah.
I will.
Just keep. Just
honored
keep,
to be there.
Yeah, Alan, just keep emphasizing that. That's all I can tell you. It's a little friendly advice from somebody who's known him for 40 years. It also steps off at noon, 4th of July, in Skokie for their big 4th of July parade. Alan Gertzner is the past executive director of the Skokie 4th of July parade. Alan, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. Have some fun out there.
Thanks so much, Dean.
Time for the Week in Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? Busy summer season. Theaters are up and running with lots of terrific shows going on right now. And that includes one from a three-time Emmy Award winner who if you didn't get to know her as one of the ensemble members, one of the originators of the Steppenwolf Theater Company. You got to know her certainly very well as Jackie, the sister to Roseanne.
Well, I'm off to fight crime and keep Lanford safe.
Oh!
Would you get that thing out of here?
Look, first of all, the safety was on. Second of all, a police revolver does not go off simply by being dropped on the floor.
Well, a waste of taxpayers' money, I'm telling you.
There. Oh, Dan, some guy named Walt called you. Thanks for supper.
Bye. It is Laurie Metcalf, who we got to know through her character Jackie on the Roseanne show. If you were a fan of The Big Bang Theory, you got to know her as Sheldon's mom in a very, very memorable performances on that show. Now Laurie is back with the theater company that she helped to start back in the day, the Steppenwolf Theater Company, in the world premiere of a play that's called Little Bear Ridge Road. It's just opened. It's going to be playing through August the 4th. It's already just been extended. And we went over to the Steppenwolf the other day and had a fantastic conversation with not only Laurie, but the director of the play, Joe Mantello, who talked to us a little bit about this. Laurie specifically talking about the long time it was since the last time she was on stage at the Steppenwolf.
It's been too long, first of all.
Right.
Hope to correct that. It's mixed feelings. The place has changed, and I have to get used to that and accept it, which
because
I have.
It's so big now, you
It's
mean?
So big. There are people in the company I have never worked with before. Uh-huh. And but it's also a sense of pride, you know, because we just started under the Steppenwolf name almost 50 years ago now, not knowing that cut to I'd be sitting here and in this gorgeous new building in a room that I hadn't even seen until now because yeah. The place is so big.
Yeah.
So I can be proud of that, but also, yeah, I'm used to the change and it's going to keep changing. You know, yeah. It's not, nothing is going to be static in this theater world that we're in, but
it must bring back memories, both happy and maybe bittersweet. Also,
it is bittersweet.
Like
yes.
You know, people that you started with, not only your own careers, but starting this now legendary theater that's known all over the mm-hmm. world.
Yeah, I did multiple shows on this main stage that we're on now. And then also in the other two buildings that we used to occupy up in Highland Park, and then, three, the Jane Addams Hull House, which is gone, and then the old St. Nicholas Theater. So it was a gradual progression, and then boom, we're in this space, and it's really impressive. Like I said, we weren't planning any of this, you know, but, and all of us would, I'm sure, admit to the fact that we're stunned that the that the theater has become such a really great, I think, prideful part of the city.
Yep.
And something that each of us individually can also take pride in.
Yeah.
Contributed at all.
Yeah. As an audience member, I kind of feel the same way. Mm. Going back and remembering seeing shows at all the places that you just mentioned with all of the original ensemble members, where did the years go?
It's
so crazy.
And that's one of the reasons why I did want to come back, is for the audience members that supported us all those years.
Nice.
Because and put up with us playing parts that we never should have played in the first place.
Yeah. It was always an adventure coming to see a Steppenwolf show.
Yeah.
Forever it's been. Was it television that kept you away for a while? You've been so busy with one series or another.
Yeah. TV eats up a lot of the time. The TV that I was doing eats up like 9 months of the year. So then I would have 3 months to do something short. But theater can be quite a commitment. You know, so sometimes, some years I couldn't even fit a play in there. But when I could, you know, I always would try to, because I love theater the best out of, you know,
yeah,
any way of working.
But if you're going to be away for TV, why not these incredible series that you have been a part of? What do you take away from that? I mean, these are legendary shows that
I know. I walked into the Roseanne show not knowing anything at all, thank God, because when I auditioned for it, had I known the hit that thing was going to be, or the legs that it would have, I would have been like a deer in the headlights. But I was very naive that way, and learned how to work in TV on the fly. That was a bit of a learning curve for me, having done nothing but theater. But I always keep gravitating back here, because this is where I feel like I understand how acting works, and I feel the most comfortable, and I feel, you know, more in charge.
Yeah.
Of when I do theater.
Yeah. And then Big Bang Theory after that was amazing. I mean, your contribution to that, and what now has become this like triple spinoff thing that they're doing, is quite amazing as well.
With Young Sheldon?
With Young Sheldon, and now it's spinning off one of the characters from...
Oh, yeah.
Young Sheldon also, but I mean, yeah, just the phenomena that Big Bang Theory was, and how important all of the recurring roles were, like yours, were on the show.
Yep. Big Bang I lucked into, because I think it was Johnny Galecki said, oh, just have her play, you know, the part. So I knew Johnny, so... But, yeah. And that was another incredible cast to be around. And then eventually my daughter ends up playing my part on Young Sheldon.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever occurred before.
Yeah, yeah. How funny. That's such a Chicago way to get a job, though. It's like, I knew Johnny.
Yeah, I knew Johnny.
I knew a guy.
He invited me in.
I knew a guy, and he got me in. Joe, talk to me a little about what Laurie brings to this role, this production, do you think?
Well, Laurie's just my favorite actor to work with, because we have a kind of shared sensibility and a kind of way that we like to work. And I always know. I mean, frankly, some of it is just I sit there and I watch her, and, you know, everything that she does is kind of perfect. And then I just sit there and kind of concoct things to throw to her that will make us both laugh.
Yeah.
That's really, like, so much of what we've made is really about, like, well, what can we do that will make me laugh every day? And there's a moment in this show every night. And sometimes the audience is laughing, and sometimes I'm the only one laughing. And it's just perfect.
Tell us a little about Little Bear Ridge Road, and what can people expect from it?
I mean, it's a very difficult play to talk about, because the plot is so... You know, Sam's plays exist in these very small containers, and they're not, like, if I told you about The Odd Couple, I'd say, like, two divorced men, one's neat, one's a slob, and they move in together, and so you have a sense of what you're going to see.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a young man comes back to his hometown to sell his recently deceased father's house. He has to interact with his aunt, his estranged aunt, and ends up spending 3 years there, almost mm-hmm. two or 3 years mm-hmm. there with her. And but what happens within that time is so enormous that it's really remarkable. He's this kind of miniaturist, but his it's like a great short story to me, this play.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it. But it sounds like it's going to be relatable in the sense that what lots of people go through when there's a death in the family,
mm-hmm.
and then it's through the resolution of business or affairs or issues, things come up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, Laurie,
definitely.
Pretty much what we're
yes.
dealing with here?
Yes, definitely. Things they've avoided, things they have in common, things they're not proud of. The way both of them shut down certain emotions. It's all about the relationship. Four characters, 90 minutes. But I do also want to say how funny it is. Lots of humor in it.
There's a lot of humor in death, isn't there? And like dealing with uncomfortable things can sometimes just make you laugh hysterically.
Yes, and some of the humor also comes out of the fact that we were kind of taught, they're not Midwest people, they live in Idaho, but they're just as sort of practical and pragmatic, and no nonsense, and brusque, and a lot of humor can come out of that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I'm sensing one of these jokes that you're talking about, that like this sort of like secret code that you two have with each other
well,
to make each
funny.
Other laugh.
In rehearsal, I think it was, I think that a trap of Sam's play is that you could lean into the sentimentality of it if you wanted to. And Joe has fought really hard to keep us from doing that. And so we've discovered this other side that has turned very humorous.
Yeah.
To us and also to the audiences. We've had a few previews already, so we can tell it's working.
Yeah. Where do you think we are right now, Laurie, with the state of theater? I mean, following COVID, people are coming back. It's better than it
back.
Was, but not where it was. Is that something that's going to recover, do you think?
I hope so. I don't. I mean, it's great to be on stage again. I was craving, you know, just to do something, because the production that Joe and I had worked on of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf got pulled when Broadway shut down at the, you know, in March of 2020. That was something to pack up and leave behind. I don't know. It's also financial, and you know, theaters. Pandemic took a big hit at a lot of the regional theaters, some of which I probably will never come back. But hopefully, subscribers like here, who have been so supportive of us all these years through thick and thin, will hang in long enough to see another revival.
You know, it's not for a lack of quality of work, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if people have just got used to being at home.
Well,
it's so easy for them to entertain themselves at their house.
It probably has gotten harder over these past 5 years to make an effort to get out and go see something or go anywhere at all. It has for me, you know, because I became such a hermit.
I think with this play, I mean, you know, we extended before we even had a performance. So I think that the appetite is there. Or we went to see, in our first week of rehearsal, we went to see Death Becomes Her. Mm. That theater was packed with people who were just having the best time.
Yep.
And we loved it, but, you know, so that was encouraging to me. The fact that that there is a demand for tickets for Little Bear Ridge Road is encouraging to me. You know, Broadway or the commercial theater in New York, that's a trickier proposition. But the audiences here have been unbelievable.
Yeah. I can't figure it out. I'm just mystified at how some shows catch fire,
mm-hmm.
and shows that you think that are going to catch fire close a month after they open, mm-hmm. and then shows before they even open, like yours, get extended.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think that Laurie Metcalf's name is part of that deal, that people are so happy to see you back on stage in Chicago again.
It's tricky with subscriptions, too, because you have a runaway success, maybe, and you have to shut it down. Because you've got something in the works that has to come in, which is always a shame. It's a double-edged sword that way.
It's a tricky time.
Mm-hmm.
These are going to be historic times, I think, that we look back on and say, remember when blah, 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 all of this happened. So what will happen next? Now, you're here till August 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Will this go somewhere else? Will this go to New York? Will this... What will happen?
Well, I think, you know, certainly I think the way that Lori and I think about it is that we're in it for the moment to have the most blissful, creative experience that we can. The other stuff, we've been doing this long enough to know that the other stuff is out of our control. If there's a demand for it to have a further life, it'll happen, but certainly... We went into this experience wanting to work together, wanting to work with Sam, wanting to work at Steppenwolf, and it's been extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, we wanted to bring a little show, a great show to Chicago, and we have no plans on it going anywhere else. It's for the Chicago audience, and if somebody in New York wants to see it, they got to come to Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
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 Yeah. When you're here, are there certain spots, Lori, that you like to hit? Clearly, you talked about Father and Son Pizza.
Father and Son, I had on my birthday. Lou Malnati's, of course. It's all food and pizza, mostly. And then Athenian Room, I've been to, you know, half a dozen times already in the very short time that we've been here.
Yeah, it's hard to beat that chicken, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. When I was driving here, I went by it. I said, I should pick up a little something for dinner tonight.
Yeah. Take cash.
Yeah, cash only. I know.
It is cash only. No reservations, cash only.
That surprised me. That surprised me. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Laurie Metcalf and director Joe Montello. The show is called Little Bear Ridge Road. It is open now. It'll play through August the 4th. You can get more information at their website, steppenwolf.org. Coming up a little bit later on, throwback interview with the late Donald Sutherland, who we lost this week. Also, a Grammy, Oscar, and Emmy winner, Common, who is going to be doing a concert at the Grant Park, Millennium Park, is talking with me about being part of the 20th anniversary of Millennium Park and this big show that he's going to be doing with the classical orchestra coming up next month. That's all still on the way. Knox, Indiana, you said.
Knox, Indiana.
Where would Knox,
K-N-O-X.
Indiana be?
Yeah. It is a little bit west-southwest of Plymouth, Indiana, southwest of South Bend.
Mm. Easy for me to go there when I go to get my cigarettes and fireworks?
A little bit out of the way.
But it's worth it.
You'd have another hour's drive to get to Knox from Hammond, right where the state line is.
We're in fireworks season right now.
Yes, we are.
Trust me, I know.
As the punks in my neighborhood can tell you.
Yeah.
I've heard a few myself.
I hope those are fireworks I'm hearing.
I've heard a few myself.
Yep. I may go over to the Bean today. It's open again, right?
Yeah, it opened up. And I'm surprised because the way they were talking just a couple weeks ago, you know, it sounded like it was going to be under, you know, construction for a while. And I was just over in Millennium Park on Wednesday night, And it was still very much under construction. So happy to hear that it's open up again.
I have to go over there and take a picture of myself in the reflection of the beam.
Like you haven't done that
like
before.
Like everybody else
Like everybody does.
Does.
Right. You go over there and touch it. And then you take a picture of, you know, of the reflection and your actual hand.
Have you ever seen the way the skyline is reflected into it during the evening hours, mm-hmm. at dusk, at sunset? It's beautiful.
Yeah.
No, you have you or
yeah, I,
or you I were have. Just too busy looking at the picture.
I was
of
looking
yourself,
at myself.
Yourself,
busy looking. At... Yeah, I quite probably have. I guess I don't know. Do you know it's been open 20 years over there?
20 years. It's 20 years. They had the big opening ceremony, I think, July of 2004.
Yeah, I talked with Common, you know, the singer, the actor, Common. He's going to be doing a concert with the Grant Park,
right? Yeah,
Symphony to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Millennium Park opening up.
You talked with him?
I did.
So, what did you have in common with him?
Very little. Very little.
You see what I did there?
Oh, I saw it. I saw it coming. I didn't have a chance to duck.
It was like a semi coming down the road. Couldn't get out of the way of it. And is Buckingham Fountain open again? Because somebody texted and said that it is.
It is reopened. Well, that was unsure as to whether or not it was going to be open today after the vandalism that took place there late Friday, early Saturday morning there. But
okay, and what's the deal with these morons that are doing stuff like that?
Who knows?
To Buckingham Fountain.
Who knows?
Pouring red dye. I'll show them. I'll show them what a political statement I make. I'm going to throw red food. I'm going to throw
also
red dye in Buckingham Fountain and spoil the day for everybody.
And in addition to things that were spray painted on the
on the
bricks
sidewalk,
sidewalk around it. Yeah,
come on. You know, protest. I don't know. You know, people certainly have the right to, you know, their political opinions.
Yeah, we had a quote from
you gotta spoil
someone
stuff.
Was there and yeah. said the same thing.
Yeah. And to spoil stuff for people who, you know, a lot of people, believe it or not, some people, you know, they come downtown just to see these landmarks. And then you morons are out there, you know, ruining everything.
I saw something on TV with a visitor from out of town who was looking forward to going to the fountain.
Yeah.
And the fountain was there, obviously, but was not in full swing.
Yeah.
That still is great in the evening, too.
Of course it is.
Lights and the way
it
comes up. Yeah.
It's beautiful. There's a lot of ways you can protest whatever it is that you want to protest. Have your political say the way that you do. I don't see how this furthers anyone's cause by doing something like that. I don't get it. Don't get me started.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
Just to add...
And you know I mean it when I'm tapping my pen.
That's your impatient.
That's the sign of I've had enough.
Yes.
You punks.
That was like my third grade teacher did the same thing.
Mm.
Looking at... And then I heard... David Schwann, go out in the hall.
Did you have a lot of that?
Oh, yeah.
I would have pictured you as being a nice little student.
Third and fourth grade, oh, yes. And it was, and then the call.
And he was a good student, I'll bet.
Well, he had to be.
Yeah, my mom was in the school.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
He had no choice.
That ruined it. I would have pictured you as a good student, too, though.
That was okay.
Andy would have been, yeah.
No, I meant you, Schwanny.
Me?
I would have guessed you as being not a troublemaker. I was a troublemaker.
That doesn't surprise me. At all. That doesn't surprise me.
Spent a lot of time in the principal's office.
They did send me down there, a friend of mine and I, once when things just really got off the rails. I was scared to death.
Yeah. Yeah, I could tell you what brand cigarettes the teacher smoked. I was down in their office. Yeah, that's when baseball was baseball. When you could catch it all on WGN. Back in the day, man, oh, man. I mean, how much a part of your life was that?
Oh.
Catching, you know, coming home and catching a game on WGN. on radio or TV.
Correct.
Both, right? I mean, it was just as fun to listen to the games on WGN radio back in the day with the Brickhouse and Lou and
Vince and Harry.
I'm
and
sorry,
Milo.
Your pal. I know you're, you know, you're personally connected. There was nothing better than listening to Ron Santo.
Oh no,
on Cubs baseball.
You didn't even have to know the score. You didn't when have you to, tuned in, because
you didn't have to know anything about anything. Yeah. You were listening for the Ron Santo show.
Well, you could tell by his demeanor and the words that he was saying or not saying what the score was.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, you could tell exactly what was happening. Man. That was the magic of it all.
What a beauty.
I miss him so much.
Me too. I was just out with his son Jeff has a podcast. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but he had me on as a guest the other day just to reminisce, and it was so much fun to reminisce about Ronnie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have the best stories because you were with him nonstop.
Yep, for the better part of 8 years.
For better, for worse.
Yeah, exactly right.
For the most hilarious moments. It was good stuff. The reason I bring it up especially today, because it was 40 years ago today, for the what is now known as the Ryan Sandberg game that took place. They were playing the St. Louis Cardinals, and Rhino hit a couple of home runs toward the end of the game. The Cubs were losing, and Ryan Sandberg hit a couple of home runs that tied things up. They went on to win the game, but read Paul Sullivan's article on this whole thing.
It's really good.
That's in the Chicago Tribune today, and he talks about how it changed the whole mentality of how people felt about the Cubs and how, you know, the legacy of going to Wrigley Field and Wrigleyville itself, how everything changed, and it all pivoted right on those Ryan Sandberg games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they got off to a really good start that year, and then they started to kind of swoon, as everybody thought they would, in June, which was kind of normal for if you're a Cubs fan. That's what you expected, the June swoon. But, you know, they had actually slipped down to third place when this game was being played, and it was the NBC National Game of the Week. Now, that actually meant something back then because it was the only game, and there was a rainout. I didn't realize this until I read Sully's column today, but there was a rainout that really allowed this game to go to the entire country when it was supposed to be regionalized in the Midwest and toward the East Coast. But the excitement at the ballpark that day and just the theatrics of the game itself really put Ryan Sandberg on the map and really kind of made the Cubs a legitimate contender for the National League East at that point, the division. And we'll just stop at the fact that they won the division. We won't have to go revisit what happened in the playoffs.
Because we do remember
we don't need to know about that
part of it also. But, yeah, you think about it. I mean, this was before lights. This was, you know, Rhino was not the superstar that he became.
Right.
Yet. But although, interesting, you know, we were talking about this at the beginning of the show of how you perceive Ryan Sandberg. Do you perceive mm-hmm. him as the ultimate fielder, or do you perceive him as the ultimate hitter? Because really, he was kind of both, right?
Yeah, I mean, I looked it up, Schwani. He did go 123 consecutive games and almost 600 chances without an error at one point in his career.
Yeah, I know. It was unbelievable.
And it obliterated the record for second baseman, not only with number of games, but also number of chances, and chances when you get an opportunity to field the ball or throw it. And it ended on a throwing error against the Pirates. But, you know, I kind of remember him as a fielder with the, you know, the legs of his pants were always dirty because he was diving on the infield and he was making plays behind the bag at second. He was making great turns from second on double plays.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to think about the fact that he hit 40 home runs in 1990. That was the last year the Cubs hosted the All-Star game. He hit 40 home runs that season. Yeah. In 84, it's so funny, you can easily remember his home run and RBI total because it was 19 home runs and 84 runs batted in. 1984 and 1984.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to be kind of curious to see which mode they have him in, whether it be the hitter or the fielder.
For the statue.
That's going to be unveiled today.
Oh, we don't know yet.
I have not heard, but I know that Rhino has had some input in it. And, you know, reading things about Rhino this time, you know, after all he's gone through lately with the cancer and being cancer-free now and just kind of realizing how important things are and how some things are not that important. It kind of puts in perspective for him, at least, you know, coming back here and celebrating such a tremendous career that he had for this team and for this city. And it couldn't happen to a better guy. I've had a chance to interview him several times. I've had a chance to play in golf outings with him, and just down to earth. He's not a gregarious, you know, a rah rah kind of guy. Never was, but you know, off the field, he's a really good guy.
Yeah, he's always I've you know, said hello to him a few times. Nothing too much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always been just impressed by his. His skill, of course, but his dignity, his grace. He never had to be a big blowhard like a lot of other,
not at all.
Like a lot of others did. He did his talking on the field.
Yep.
And
that old school. I mean he had guys that did the other stuff, then that was fine with him, but you know, every team needs some of those other guys, but every team needs a guy like Rhino.
Yeah. There's not as many. So this was a national game, which meant that the usual WGN TV crew were not covering the game.
Right.
And when that was the case, then they would go over to the WGN radio booth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we had here on WGN radio, it was Harry Carey, of course, but mm-hmm. was it Lou Boudreau who was with him?
You said? Both Vince and Lou were with him.
Vince and Lou.
Yeah.
With Harry Carey. And this was the first of Rhino's home runs, June 23rd, 1984.
Harry Carey back at Wrigley Field. Here's Ryne Sandberg to lead it off. First pitch low, ball one. Boy, the ovation the crowd gave the Cubs as they trotted into the dugout. At the end of the top half of the inning was something to hear. Here's the pitch. Strike call, and the crowd evens up with a ball to the strike. That was a high strike, and Sandberg can't believe it.
Goosebumps right now.
I do too. I was just going to tell you that same thing.
Just listening to Harry doing that call, and you know, Rhino, cool as a cucumber, rounding the bases.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Sutter not looking happy at all.
Not at all
on the pitcher's mound. So there it was, 11-9, and then what was it, the 10th inning,
yeah.
Right? That they came back and Rhino was up again. Fantastic. Just fantastic. And you get the sense. I hope you're getting the sense. I mean, if you want to watch it, the it's all on YouTube.
It's everywhere.
And
yeah.
You can see it. But you get the sense of, you could hear in Harry's voice when he realizes that Rhino just hit a second home run.
Yep.
That you can see frustration, madness on Sutter's face.
Sutter.
He threw his glove
poor
down
guy,
on
yep.
the ground
yep.
During the whole thing, and from that, and the fans, of course,
oh, it was crazy,
going crazy out in the bleachers and all over the park. But everything changed right for Ryne Sandberg Day. It was 40 years ago today.
Can't believe that.
And most appropriately, Ryne Sandberg. getting a statue unveiled. It's going to be at 3 o'clock today. Bob Costas will be there.
Mm-hmm, to defend himself again. Because there have been people that have been ripping. I told you earlier today that they awarded the player of the game to Willie McGee because he had hit for the cycle. I mean, he had a single, double, triple, and a homer, which is very rare, obviously. And the Cardinals were winning, and they had to wrap up because the game had gone past its allotted time, and they're going into their credits. And then the home run happens, and you throw that all out the window, and you continue to play. But it's not like Bob Costas was himself awarding a player of the game to Willie McGee. It was a sponsored element that they had to do. And at that time, before the home run, Willie McGee was the player of the game.
Yeah. I think Costas has had several interviews with Rhino since then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For various occasions. You had mentioned Rhino's battle with cancer. Mm-hmm. In January, he announced that he had metastatic prostate cancer. Has gone through treatment, completed chemotherapy not too long ago. He said that he is cancer-free. So all the best to Rhino. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Congrats, and definitely congrats.
And Godspeed with everything. Truly one of the greatest ever. Powerful song, Glory, from the motion picture Selma. It won Academy Award for Best Original Song that year for John Legend, who you're hearing sing here. And also for Chicago's very own Common, who you heard a moment ago with his poetic rapping. Common is an incredibly popular musical artist, is a rap artist. He is an outstanding actor. He is an activist. He is really just a wonderful person. So giving and so benevolent to others, helping others. Common will be back in the Chicago area July 20th to do a concert, a free concert at Millennium Park to celebrate its 20th anniversary. And he will be performing that night with the Grant Park Symphony and Choir. I've seen Common perform before. I've never seen him perform with a full classical orchestra. Never seen him perform before with a full choir like that. So I think it's going to be very, very moving. He's not only going to be doing songs like Glory and songs from previous albums, but he's got a new album that's going to be coming out, and he'll be doing songs from that as well. Last week, he was here in Chicago, and I met up with him in Grant Park at the Pritzker Pavilion, where this is going to take place. And we talked about the show and his new album and Jennifer Hudson, with whom he now has been romantically linked. And we had a wonderful concert, a wonderful conversation, rather, a conversation while the orchestra itself was rehearsing. You'll hear the orchestra in the background, sometimes more than background, when they start booming a little bit. But it's a pretty cool conversation, not only for what Common is saying, but for what's happening in the background as a preview of his free concert that he's going to be putting on Saturday, July the 20th. Now, if you want tickets to sit in the pavilion section, with actual seats, you do have to reserve those now. But what I think a lot of people are going to do, bring a blanket out, bring some food, sit on the great lawn, and just enjoy what most certainly will be a spectacular night out at in Grant Park at Millennium Stadium. So amidst all the music in the background and the classical music vibe that was going on that day, my conversation with Common. Well, look at you, Mr. Grant Park, sitting like by the pavilion, the little orchestra that's probably going to interrupt us a couple of times.
Yes.
This must mean something to you, I'll bet, to be down here and be part of the scene down here.
Dean, I love that title, Mr. Grant Park. That's a good one, because just being here in Grant Park and hearing the orchestra warm up right now and just feeling Chicago summertime, it's just, man, it's one of those, like, nothing like it moments and just spaces. And I'm very, very excited about being able to come here and perform on July 20th.
Yeah, with the Grant Park Symphony on top of it.
Grant Park Symphony.
Which is going to be amazing, which is the orchestra that's on the stage rehearsing right now. Talk to me a little bit about coming down here. I mean, you know, you grew up here, I grew up here. We were always downtown for something, whether it was Taste or shows or the old band shell.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Is that what you did also?
I mean, growing up, it definitely was the Taste of Chicago. Coming down for a lot of parties. They used to have house parties down here at the Bismarck Hotel and different hotels down here. So I would come down and get to music, but it was house music, and it was amazing. And then coming down to go down to the water tower, and eventually it started to be me coming down to be on the lake and chill out with friends. And a good friend of mine, Dr. Everett, has a boat that I chill out and see. That was the first time I got to see downtown from a different perspective, from Lake Michigan, looking at it. So, I mean, coming home is always extra special, but, you know, being to come downtown and see how much it's just how more beautiful it gets, it just makes me appreciate our city so much.
Yeah, it does kind of fill you up with pride a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Doesn't it, as a Chicagoan?
Oh, yeah.
When you're down here, especially in the summertime, it's a beautiful day, right now at least.
Anyway. Yes, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to take it in. Listen, people say, man, we got this weather for this moment. Yo, I'm going to enjoy this moment. But one thing about Chicago that you get to appreciate after traveling and to different places is the architecture and the design of our city is really fly. It's really beautiful. It's fresh. It's like, and as I said, it keeps evolving and growing. You know, I come home and I'm like, wait, look at this right here. Like, I'm driving by new places and I'm getting educated myself when I'm home.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, look at this. This will literally be one of the best places that I've performed in my life. In Grant Park, with the Grant Park Symphony Orchestra. Right?
Because, I mean, you've played arenas, you've played outdoor venues like this, you've played with orchestras like this, but to do it where you grew up, in some place that's special to you, for this 20th anniversary of Millennium Park, which I can't believe Millennium Park's 20 years old. When I read it, it's like, how did that happen so fast?
But I
guess it makes sense.
I remember when Millennium Park was, when Millennium Park was like first starting and they were building, we were like, wow, this is nice around here. So to be here for the 20th year anniversary, and I've done a lot of different orchestra shows like around the country, but it's nothing like coming to Chicago and getting to do this and knowing like it's gonna be summertime. Listen to the music, like, come on, like this is going to allow us to, the music that I've created, it will go to so many new places with this orchestra. Like, it will go like to places I never imagined, and I mean, I could just sit back and listen to them.
This is like on cue.
Yeah.
You got the orchestra and choir. And here's where I picture you. Here's where I picture you coming out on the stage dressed up like Bugs Bunny.
Nah, none of that. I ain't bugging like that. Yeah. I'm gonna come fresh for you, Dean, and this is the thing though. When I get to perform with them, the combination of hip hop and soul music with orchestral like musicality is one of the best things you can experience, because it's like the whole range of what music is in many ways, because the orchestra is so structured and it's beautiful in its structural way. Hip hop is so free and like and in its own way, it's like the combination of them worlds and the sounds. It's nothing like it. I'm so happy that I got friends calling me already ready for the show. It's gonna be amazing.
What will be included? I saw in the lineup that it's going to be a mixture of things that you're going to be doing, but among them will be the song for which you won an Academy Award glory.
Yes.
That I'm ready to burst into tears already just even thinking about how magnificent that's going to be.
with the full orchestra and you doing this this poignant song?
You know, I am so grateful that we get to perform Glory like with an orchestra, with the Grant Park Orchestra, because that song gives me like a spirit and an energy, like when I'm performing it and to have an orchestra backing me, because it was, you know, we recorded it with an orchestra, and I got to give thanks to Patrick Warren who composed and wrote those strings, but to be able to do it live and to have all these musicians just giving their all while me and my band are giving our all and our vocalists, you just gave me an idea though when you just said it, so now it's going to be even more incredible.
All right.
You don't know. You just gave me an idea.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah,
I'm going to be right up there.
Yes.
I can't wait to see what you're going to do with it all. You've got a lot that's going on right now.
Yeah.
You also have, within a day or two of the concert, the new album's going to be coming out.
Yes.
I know the last time we talked, you were working on it.
Yes.
You told me about it. Are you still working on it? Is it done?
No, it's complete. The album is called The Auditorium, Volume 1. And it's an album that Pete Rock and I have done. Pete Rock is a legendary producer from the hip-hop genre. And the album is out July 12th. Which will be right around when we'll be performing here in Grant Park. We've released a few singles. One is called Wise Up, the other is Dreaming. We just shot a video for Dreaming. I'm excited, like, and I'll be coming home to shoot a video at some point, because I know a lot of my Chicagoans are like, when are you coming home to shoot a video? And I'll be home to shoot a video, but the album is ramping up. I can't wait to bring it out, but the singles have been really popping off and really touching people, you know, that really love music, love hip-hop, and I'm excited about it.
Are you going to be doing anything different, unusual?
I will bring new in performance with this new album. I'll be bringing a whole new thing, a whole new regime, because some of it is just the boom bap, that's what we call the basement sound, and so we'll have Pete Rock, who will be up there with the drum machine, but we'll also have a little bit of musicians, DJ. It's gonna be a new configuration of musicians, but it's gonna be very exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. The last time that you were here, when your book came out. You were telling me that Jennifer Hudson was going to collaborate with you on this new album.
On the album.
Is that going to be part of it album. Also?
She's on a powerful song. She blessed this song. I can't wait for people to hear it. I'm so proud of having her on my album. And it's the right song. It's called A God There Is. And it's and she just sounds just dynamic, amazing, and I hope that song is a single.
Yeah. Is there a chance that she might also be joining you on the stage?
Who knows? I know she should be here, so maybe she will join.
Yeah.
That could be.
Yeah.
I'll say, let's wait and see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate asking people about their personal lives, and I'm not going to, because somebody asked Jennifer the other day, how are things going between you two? And she said, everything's fine, and that's all you need to know. And that is all we need to know. But in light of, you must get constant questions. Jennifer Lopez and Ben Affleck and other famous couples trying to live a life in the spotlight. Is that incredibly difficult for famous people to do?
I think it is difficult, but you know, when it's a true relationship that you care about, you'll do whatever it takes to keep it sacred, to keep it true and sincere, and keep it in God's space. And Jennifer is just this, man, she's just a dynamic, beautiful human being, like powerful. She's like a light that I'm like, wow, how do you have that much light, like, and just heart and spirit and just joy. She's amazing, and I'll just say that for me, I've learned that you know, like, you gotta live your life. You gotta live. I'm gonna go. We'll go out and do what we do. Like, go to the movies and do things we like to do, but, you know, we're not out here to parade and put our relationship on display.
Right. Yeah. I've got to ask you about acting.
Yeah.
You've got Silo. Yeah. Do you have any movies coming up, or what kind of acting projects are coming?
So Silo is the main focus for me as an actor right now. It's on Apple TV Plus, amazing show. Like, and we, our second season, we filmed it. They will announce when it's being released at some point. I'm really excited about this season. Yeah. The second season is special. It's really great, and the show really got a buzz for me. So I will be doing new films, but I wanted to focus on this album, The Auditorium, and give it the attention that I give the other work that I do.
Saturday, July 20th, 7:30, here at the Pritzker Pavilion. Common, the Grant Park Orchestra, who knows what's going to happen.
Yes.
But it's going to be an amazing show, and it's free. I mean, there is some reserved seating, a whole situation, but for the most part, people can just come out here to the park.
People come
just
out.
Just like you and I did as kids, and came out and listened to music.
Just come out.
You can come out and listen to Common do his music out here.
Yes, sir. Yes. It's going to be wonderful. Come on out. I'm hoping this place is packed all the way behind the bushes.
You know it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Chicago loves you.
Yeah,
we do too.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I
it's
love
always
Chicago.
So good to see you. Man.
Great to see you.
Thank you very much.
Bless.
There you go. Common at Grant Park with the Grant Park Symphony rehearsing in the background. I know it was a little loud at times, and you know, you had to strain to hear the interview, but we had no control of that. We didn't have them on a separate mix or anything. It was just happening. It just happened. We didn't know that it was going to happen, and we did the best we could with it. I think it's kind of cool to hear the orchestra rehearsing at the same time. It's 11:52, coming up after 12 o'clock, my archive interview with now the late Donald Sutherland, who we lost this week. That's on the way. All right, coming up, we'll get into our Food Time show for today. And we're going to be talking about some summertime treats today. Give you a little preview of what I'm going to be cooking on TV this coming Wednesday. Got to tell you, I've got the corn on the cob fever right now when it gets the way that it's been outside. Corn on the cob on the grill, there is nothing better. And, you know, just corn on the cob, you know, plain. I frequently will put nothing on it. That's how delicious the corn is. But there's a whole variety of toppings. We can talk about that. But I've got some other things that I'm going to do also this coming Wednesday. I'll tell you about all coming up in a few minutes. I also wanted to remind you about some other things that we've got coming up on TV next week. We have got Academy Award nominee Lily Gladstone tomorrow. She starred in Killers of the Desert Moon with Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro. She's got a brand new movie that's coming out we talked about. So that will be tomorrow. Willem Dafoe and Jesse Plemons starring in a new film with Emma Stone, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. It's a really interesting and a complete original kind of movie. They'll join us Thursday on the TV Morning News. And also Thursday, singer Ben Platt, Tony Award winner from Broadway, and he starred in lots of different theatrical productions. And I first met him when he was here in Chicago in the Book of Mormon. And he has gone on to great things in Dear Evan Hansen, the show for which he won his Tony Award. He's going to be at Ravinia on Friday. So we'll talk with him about the show that he's got coming up. He's got a brand new album, solo album out right now, and is doing a big tour. So a lot of big names on the TV Morning News. We'll share some of those, of course, when we do our daily entertainment segment with Bob Surratt every weekday morning between 8 and 8:30. So we're going to be looking forward to that. Shwani, earlier in the show, we were talking about decluttering the house a little bit.
Yeah, story of my life.
Yeah, getting rid of stuff. you know, why am I keeping this? You know, like that sort of thing. And I was talking about, you know, trying to get rid of, you know, still like, why am I keeping certain things? I've got like millions of CDs, millions of DVDs that I never watch, honestly. You know, I'm so busy always watching new movies and, you know, things like that. I never really sit down and put a DVD in to watch anymore, because also everything's available online now. It's so just so much easier. So, you know, we were talking, you know, what do you do with all this stuff? Somebody made an excellent suggestion on our text line, saying, why don't you donate it to a public library?
That's a very good idea.
Right?
Very good idea.
I think that's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
They're always looking for stuff like that. And also somebody suggested donate it to a retirement home. Like a senior,
that'll work too.
Senior living.
They have libraries. People go in, you know, and exchange things maybe or check something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of good ideas there. All right. We'll update news talking about donating things to, you know, charity, resale shops, you know, that sort of thing today. I was talking about DVDs and CDs. And even furniture, you know, things that, you know, clothing, things that you want to donate. I've had so many texts today saying that people, organizations are not accepting donations.
Some are, some aren't. I found this out when my father passed away, because I had a lot of things that I needed to, that I didn't have room for,
right,
or
yeah,
didn't really need myself. Got a lesson in what people want in furniture. We had some beautiful furniture, but it was older, and I was told there really wasn't much of a demand for it.
Yeah.
You know, so you have that
also. What did you wind up doing with it?
I fortunately was able to talk to outfit that does estate sales and so forth, and they were able to take the furniture and, you know, made a deal with them as to how they were going to do it.
So they disposed of it.
Yes, somewhere. Yeah, hmm. Yeah. But I needed to do that in order to vacate the apartment where Dad was living.
Right.
You know how that goes.
Here's a text. I tried donating my parents' DVDs to the local library in church, and nobody wanted them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That can happen.
I would think that, like, when my mom and my brother were in skilled nursing, you know, they had movie nights all the time,
mm-hmm,
showing yeah, movies of the people yeah, who lived there. I would think that they would want
yeah,
movies.
Yeah. And where my dad lived, they had movie nights all the time, too, and then COVID put an end to that. Obviously.
Well, people getting together, you mean.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because they had a beautiful room, a library where they would show the movies.
Yeah, common rooms.
Common rooms. Right. People, you know, they made popcorn for them and had snacks and so forth.
Yeah.
And
well, during COVID, I mean, everybody had to stay in their own room.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And that never really came back, as far as I know, after, you know, everything calmed down. And the pandemic was over.
Yeah. I had a text that said, I'm a senior and wanted to donate furniture and clothing, but I can't move it myself. I was looking for someone to pick it up. I guess most places don't do that anymore.
Some do.
Some pickup services. I mean, how is a senior supposed to move all this stuff to get it to a place where they can donate it?
Yeah.
If the donations are even accepted.
If they're accepted. Right. 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 Clothing, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there are places that take certain things. They don't want other things. You know, the best thing to do would be to perhaps check online for things. I did that myself,
yeah,
you know.
I guess so, yeah.
Just type in what you're looking for, and you get a number of options, hopefully.
Or maybe I should just keep all the old clothing. I still look good in a lime green leisure suit.
The lime green leisure suit and the polyester shirt that matched with the chains.
Still very, very attractive. All I have to do is lose about 50 pounds or so. So happy you've come to rest your bones with me. We're on our little Sunday morning get-together. Roy, we've covered a lot of things here today. Oh, one of the things I wanted to remind you about is a concert that will be taking place at Ravinia tonight. The great Michael Feinstein is doing a tribute to the great Tony Bennett tonight. Tony Bennett was always a big mainstay at Ravinia. And, of course, he passed away. But how great that the legacy will continue. And that Michael Feinstein, who is a fantastic singer, will be doing an evening of in tribute to Tony Bennett. That's at Ravinia tonight. You can check on tickets by going to ravinia.org. It's going to be a beautiful night to be out at Ravinia. So look forward to all of that. Wanted to give you another quick reminder about Dave Schwann, who is going to be the Grand Marshal of the Skokie 4th of July Parade. We talked about this a little bit earlier today. And he is, this is going to be 4th of July, obviously. The parade steps off at 12 noon. And after the parade, they have what they call the Skokie Family Fest, which is at 6:30. It should be a lot of fun. And then at 9:30, they're going to have a big fireworks display in Skokie. So should be a lot of fun and lots of different communities. I noticed that in the Tribune, they always put together a list of where all of the fireworks are taking place around the Chicago area, out in the suburbs. So if you're interested in that, if you go to chicagotribune.com, you can take a look at the full list and see what is available out there for that. All right, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, I wanted to play an interview from our vault from the year 2012. It was one of the last times that I talked with Donald Sutherland. I've talked to him many times through the years about different projects that he was working on. But younger generations, while he had you know, so many classic and amazing films for his career, including MASH, including Clute, including Ordinary People was, I think, you know, one of his finest. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the remake, was amazing. Younger generations will remember him best as President Snow from the Hunger Game movies. And in 2012, they were wrapping up that series, and we had the opportunity to talk with Donald Sutherland, who passed away this past, I believe it was Thursday, that he passed away at the age of 88. We remember Donald Sutherland when we come right back. Another great performance from the legendary Donald Sutherland, who we lost after a long illness this past week at the age of 88 years old. Many remember him best as President Snow or the Hunger Game movies, but you go back and watch some of the classic films like MASH, like Clute, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. He was so great. In that, I mean, his filmography goes on, and always really thoughtful, wonderful films. I had the honor of talking with him on several occasions. One of the last times was for the Hunger Game movies, and you know, we sat and we talked about the series itself and the popularity of the books from which these movies came.
I don't know. I can tell you my reaction. I didn't know anything about the books when I was given a script by Gary Ross, who's a fellow that I admired greatly, and now I'm in awe of, in the thrall of. He had written this script that are you familiar with a film called The Battle of Algiers by Gilo Pontecorvo? It's something that you should look at anyway. It's just it's a wonderful film. And I felt like I had just come out of seeing that. This had the same kind of political possibility, the same kind of revolutionary intent underneath it all in that allegory. And I just wanted to be a part of it. I thought maybe it could motivate, revolutionize, who knows, young people who have been pretty dormant of late.
You know, that's really what struck me most. It's funny that you should say that when I came out of this last night, with all the talk about it's the next Twilight and all the internet nonsense really that's going on, it's like nobody is talking about how relevant this film is.
Oh my God!
With the Occupy movement going on, I mean,
exactly.
She is sort of a one woman Occupy movement fighting the man, isn't she?
And she so beautifully portrays it. You know, Jennifer Lawrence. I said to somebody, she should be called Jennifer Lawrence Olivier.
Yeah.
You know, no, she is that
wow.
great. She's great. She's great. She's a great actor, and because I. This is Joan of Arc. You know, if you've read George Bernard Shaw's St. Joan, he has a preface where he describes Joan as a genius. And Katniss Everdeen, in this Colosseum, this furnace, she becomes, the genius that was always in her, realizes itself. And it's thrilling to see. It's thrilling. How, you know, when Rue dies, and she puts her three fingers up. I just went, oh, God, you know.
It's a stunning performance.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
It's so well written. It's such, I think, such an interesting statement on this reality show world in which we live now.
Yeah.
Also, where sort of this anything goes and, you know, this...
this place where Rush Limbaugh can call that decent, elegant young woman a slut. How is that possible? And I got to tell you, I live in France. If that were France, he'd be in jail. You know, you're just not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. But anyway, sorry, Catherine.
Is this, of the many films that you've been in, I mean, does this, how would this rank of the films for which you are most proud to have been part of?
Yeah, I can't actually talk about that. That's like saying, which is your favorite child?
Yeah.
But when I came out of it, I thought Gary had done something that's really difficult to do. Arundhati Roy wrote and won the Booker Prize for her novel, The God of Small Things. And somebody asked her, why won't you let them make a film of it? And she said, it's already a movie in 6 million imaginations. Gary has taken a film that is a movie in millions upon millions of imaginations and made it one film. This reflects absolutely what's in everybody's head. And more than that, he has done something that was not in the book, but he has written those two scenes from my character that talk about hope and fear. And it synthesizes perfectly the intent of the film, the nature of the oligarchy of the privileged and how you control the underclass. It's, I think he's done an extraordinary job.
Well, you can just hear the complete passion in his voice and his enthusiasm about playing this role, President Snow, in the Hunger Games movies, more than just an adventure series, talking about the poignancy and, you know, what it means to a real society. The interview from 2012. I hope that you'll take an opportunity to take a look at some of Donald Sutherland's classic films, some of his older films. If you're, you know, looking around for something to watch, something to stream, this is the perfect opportunity now to remember his great body of work. Donald Sutherland, we lost this past Thursday at the age of 88. All right, coming up in our next half hour, we'll get into our Food Time segment. Today, we had a great time this past Wednesday with some cool weather recipes, which I'm going to try to focus on a little bit, I think, on my TV cooking segment. Every Wednesday at about 9:35 in the morning, I do some cooking on TV, and I'll do some grilling. I'll do some, you know, traditional things, of course, for the 4th of July. But when the weather is as hot as it's been, who wants to even turn on a grill? Who wants to, you know, get behind a heat source? You just want to, you know, enjoy yourself with some deliciously refreshing foods, which is what we did this past Wednesday with a chilled cucumber soup recipe. I've gotten so many compliments from people who have tried it since I did it on TV this past week. I mean, just into a blender or a food processor, you're peeling and seeding some fresh cucumber. You're putting in some Greek yogurt along with some garlic. I put some scallions in there, some parsley, some fresh dill, and went to town, you know, on the blender or the food processor. You can do it either way. Actually, I didn't put the yogurt in the food processor. I didn't want to overprocess that. I processed everything except the yogurt. And then once that was completely purified, then I added the yogurt to it and mixed it all together, chilled it for a couple of hours. And it was this slightly creamy, but, you know, that chilled cucumber, refreshing kind of taste. Oh, man, was it good, especially with the dill. And just, you know, perfect for a hot summer day. We're going to continue, although I am going to do some turn the grill on this coming Wednesday with corn on the cob, which is, you know, completely in season right now. Every store has it. It's in abundance. It looks beautiful. And I've got several corn on the cob recipes. If you want to enjoy eating the corn right off of the cob, which, you know, I could do every single day of the week for the rest of my life. I love it that much.
And several times a day.
Holy every day. Smokes. Is there anything better than roasted corn on the cob?
I was thinking about it this week also, just like you. Yes. Oh, I need to make my Michigan run to get the corn at a favorite place up there.
Mm-hmm. You have a secret farm that you go to?
No, it's not a farm. It's a market, Sawyer Market in Sawyer, Michigan. Oh. But they sell locally grown corn. And I have bought some corn there the morning it had been picked.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I've bought it from farm stands. I've bought it.
Yeah.
What was the corn? Remember the Spike Odell used to have that sweet corn?
That sweet corn, and it was good.
What was that?
That corn was packaged in that netting.
Yeah,
that we get.
And the green netting.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck was that called?
I don't remember, but I had some of that. And, you know, they said you could eat it raw. I didn't. I cooked it, but yeah, it was good.
It was exceptionally delicious. Somebody will remember what that is. But I was just at the regular store, you know, the regular grocery store yesterday, as I do on Saturday mornings, as you know.
Did you cover up the cart?
Naturally.
Okay.
I don't want people see me buying 12 ears of corn.
All for yourself.
What are they going to think?
What's this man going to do?
I was getting ready for my food segment because I'm going to be roasting some corn, but it was beautiful. The corn was just beautiful. You know, sometimes it looks kind of raggedy.
Raggedy and kind of a brown, but this one had that nice, fresh green color.
It was bursting. You know, it was like, that's the best. I pulled back the husk and the silk a little bit so I can look at the kernels, and you want to see them like nice and big and milky underneath there. So I'm going to roast up some corn, just show you my surefire perfect way to grill corn on the cob, which to me, by the way, is the only acceptable method of cooking it. I know a lot of people like to boil it. That should be against the law. That should be a felony.
That's the way I cook the corn, too, by the way, on the grill.
Oh, yeah.
No. On the grill.
Yeah, you boil all the flavor
out
of it.
You do. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yep. And it's so easy to do on the grill. But I've got some other things I'm going to be doing with it as well. I'll tell you about those, give you a little preview of what I'm going to be doing on TV. And if you've got some corn on the cob ideas or recipes, salads maybe that you like to make with corn, 312-981-7200. We'll get right to it here. Nothing better than corn.
As far as you can see around here.
Summertime.
On a fence in a car.
I love roasting it on the grill, but there's other ways to cook it. I just don't like boiling it. I mean, I grew up with, you take the corn on the cob, you boil it, and you boil all the flavor out of it. So many other better ways to make it. I'll tell you the perfect way to do it in just a second here. We're talking about the corn that we used to feature here on WGN, the Me Rise sweet corn. I'm getting all kinds of stories here on our text line of how China owns bought the rights to it, apparently. It's according to the text line. Twin Garden Farms, which is where we used to get it from, Twin Garden Farms in Harvard, Illinois, no longer sells corn to the public, only to commercial resellers, according to one texter. Harvard had the perfect soil to grow it. It sure was good. That much I know. So, you know, finding the good corn is what you do. But I'll tell you what, I've had really good luck. Just going to the good old grocery store and, you know, you look for the ears that are a little plump. You don't want to get anything that looks all dried out. There's, as I say, a number of different ways to cook it. This is Mike on our phone line, though, with a corn update. Mike, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hello, Dean. This is Mike from Bourbonnais. Enjoy your show. And I wanted to tell you that one of your weathermen, Mike Jansen, Hersher native, his family grows Jansen sweet corn.
Oh, really?
And it is at the top. It is fantastic.
Really?
And what they do is they've got many locations through Kankakee County, and some are like rural, so people will be able to get it, but they're on farms. But they grow fantastic corn.
Really?
You got to try it because I don't know if it's a brother, father, but it's a relation from Mike. You know, he's originally from Hersher, which is in Kankakee County.
Yeah, right. Oh, I'll have to talk to him about that. I never heard that.
Yeah. Next time you talk to Mike, both of you guys, him. See if he can bring you in some.
Exactly. Do you? So how do you do your corn when you're doing corn on the grill?
Well, I sometimes will wrap it in foil and butter it, or sometimes I cheat. I put it in the microwave and I put it on, wrap it in a paper towel for like 15 seconds. There's so many different
not 15 seconds
recipes. On YouTube, you could just go crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not 15 seconds, though, right? That's not enough.
Well, let me think here. I'm wrong on that. But I do throw it.
Got to be more than that.
Grilling corn is probably, to me, the best because, like you say, it's summertime. You're outside.
Sure.
It's grilling.
Yeah, and I know not everybody can do that, but the grilling process brings out the sugars in the corn and caramelizes it, and then it becomes extra sweet.
Correct.
It just used to kill me. I mean, you know, my mother did corn on the cob. She was cooking for a lot of people, so she needed to get it done quickly. She'd throw it in a giant kettle and boil the heck out of it. Which is not awful, but compared to the flavor. I mean, you could roast it in the oven, and it would caramelize. You could do a lot of different things. Now, when you say the aluminum foil with butter, that means that you took the silk off, you took the husk off, right?
Oh, yes.
Cleaned it.
Correct.
Yeah, because that's definitely one way to do it. And if I'm serving a lot of people, that's the way I'll do it, because otherwise, but it can be kind of a mess. But really, if you take the corn in the husk with the silk, put it in water, submerge it for 5 minutes in some water so the water really gets in there, and then throw it on the grill, it works perfectly fine with the husk. The husk doesn't burn up or anything like that. It steams it, and then it roasts it. It is a little bit of a mess to clean it. You know, after you're done cooking it, you got to wait for it to cool off a little bit.
I consider you a master chef. So whatever you cook and how you cook it, that's the way it should be cooked.
Well, I don't know about that, but I like the microwave idea. That's a good one too.
If you're in,
But the thing is, whether it's in aluminum foil or whether it's in the husk or whatever it is, I get my oven up to about 400 degrees. You can do this in your oven inside your house, too, if you want. About 400 degrees. On the grill, 7 minutes, give it one-third of a turn. 7 minutes, give it one-third of a turn. Every 7 minutes, give it about one-third of a turn, and you'll have perfect corn on the cob every time.
That sounds good. And, you know, now I sometimes eat it off the cob, but my wife, she likes to cheat. She cuts it off.
Cuts it off, yeah.
She cuts it off the cob.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you get for marrying a fancy girl like that.
I know. Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. And like I said, you touch back with Mike because
there's
a very, very successful corn, sweet corn business. The corn is fantastic. I guarantee you.
Never knew that about Mike. I'm going to get more info on it. I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you, pal.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. 1245 WGN. Okay, how about some corn recipes from you? Let me tell you some that I have that you can do, whether you cut the corn off of the cob or leave it on there, what kind of toppings you put on it. A lot of people love to put cheeses and spices and all kinds of different things on there. Personally, I like a little butter and a little salt, and that's it. Sometimes I'll just have it with nothing because sometimes the corn is so sweet, I just want to enjoy the deliciousness of it all. But if you've got a recipe, let me know what you do with your corn, and I'll tell you what I'm going to be doing with mine on TV this coming Wednesday on the morning news right after this. Sure, their corn in Iowa is delicious. We love our Illinois corn. Also very delicious. And that's what we're talking about today on our Food Time show. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. We're talking about roasting it, how you do it, some recipes for it. What I've done, I mean, you know, just eating it straight off the cob is a great, fantastic summertime treat. But I'll take the roasted corn, let it cool down a little bit, and then let's get a chef's knife and run down the kernels, you know, cut the kernels off of the cob. They have a lot of fancy little gadgets now that, you know, supposedly cut the kernels off the corn. I think the easiest and simplest of ways is simply to just take your knife and, you know, slice it down. Nice sharp knife, and the corn will come right off. I take the roasted corn off of the grill. It's nice and caramelized, nice and sweet. I'll take some asparagus that I've grilled on the grill as well. Cut that into bite-sized pieces. I'll take some red bell peppers that I've roasted on the grill. Cut those up in some nice pieces. Some Vidalia onions that I've grilled up. I'm grilling up all these vegetables now because it brings out the sugars. It brings out the flavors. It brings out the sweetness. Cut them into bite-sized pieces. Mix it all with some, you know, the pasta of your choice. I think like a nice rotelli, something spirally, because then you're going to make an Italian vinaigrette. And mix it all together, throw a little Parmesan cheese in there, and you have the best summer pasta salad that you will ever have with these grilled vegetables in there. This coming Wednesday, what I'm going to be doing are some chicken and corn foil packets where you lay down the heavy-duty aluminum foil, lay down, you know, 2-3 sheets of it, and you put in, take your corn on the cob, cut it into maybe 4-inch pieces, and get some little red potatoes and cut those into small pieces. I'm going to put some chicken thighs in there. And what else am I going to put? Oh, the Vidalia onions. I'm going to put all of that into a foil packet, wrap it up, super, super seal it tight, put it on the grill so it can all cook together and all the flavors can go together. And these foil packets are like little miniature meals with the potatoes, with the corn, with the onions, with the chicken. The chicken thighs or chicken drumsticks are so flavorful. And they cook up just fantastic. I'm going to be doing that this coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment. Here's Don at 312-981-7200. Don, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
The best way to cook corn on the cob, cut the short end off,
okay,
soak it in water,
okay,
leave husk and everything on, cook it in the microwave for 3 minutes, turn it, and do it for another 3 minutes. Hold on with a glove because the fat end is going to be hot.
It's going to be hot.
And squeeze it out. Everything will come off at once.
Really? And the silk and the silk and the husk all stay together?
Yes, but you may have a few, but that's the best way to do it.
Really? I'm going to give that a try. That sounds like magic.
Put it in water. Cut the short end off.
Yeah.
Put it in water. Let it soak for a couple minutes. Put it in the microwave for 6 minutes, 3 minutes on each side. Turn it every 3 minutes. And then take the hot end with a glove. Hold on to it and squeeze it, and it'll come right out.
Squeeze the cob right out, and it comes
yes.
right. I'm going to try that this afternoon. I'm going to try your method this afternoon and see how that works.
Well, I hope you let me know.
Yeah, listen, so, and the corn comes out perfectly cooked, right?
Corn comes out perfect, and it's very juicy. It saves the flavor and everything.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I like that, because I'm just not a fan of boiling the flavor away. But it would work perfectly in a microwave like that.
You're right.
And pretty fast, too. I like that idea.
6 minutes.
Yeah. Thank you, Don. I appreciate it. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Hello, Pam. You're on WGN. What do you think?
What do you think of this
microwave idea that Don had?
I'm sorry, what?
What do you think of this idea that Don had of...
Well, mine is similar. You peel the corn... I always cut off the narrow, the bad, you know, the tip part that's up by the husk.
The small one. The small one. Yeah, okay.
I cut that off. Then I wrap it in wax paper, and I put them in the microwave 2 minutes per ear. So obviously if you do 4 ears, it's 8 minutes.
Okay.
It's easy. You don't have the mess of the husk and stuff because it's already peeled.
You took
and
that off already, right?
Yeah. So you peel them, wash them, cut the tip off. Roll it up in wax paper, just, you know, each ear gets rolled up in wax paper, and you don't have to turn them or anything. You just put them in 2 minutes per ear.
Huh.
And that's how I've been cooking it for the last few years.
Yeah. I don't really use wax paper for anything. The wax doesn't melt onto the corn?
I've never seen it or tasted it.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never seen it on there or tasted it.
Because I guess you could wrap it in paper towels, right? And it would be the same?
Probably, but would it dry out through the paper towel? I don't know.
I'm not
Unless
sure.
you moisten the paper towel, maybe.
I'm not sure, or like parchment, or... I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to do some corn on the cob experiments today, based on what all of you are saying. If my house blows up today, you'll know what happened.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
You were talking about... putting corn on the grill and you soak it for 5 minutes. I thought you had to, you know, you soak it before it goes on.
Yes.
I thought you had to soak it for a long time, like an hour.
No. Really, you just want to be able to get some moisture into the kernels through the the husk and the silk. So really, if you just submerge it for about 5 minutes or so, the water gets inside, and it helps like steaming the ear of corn once you put it on the grill. But you definitely do not need to put it in water for an hour before you do that. Definitely not.
Okay, and then how long do you put it on the grill for?
And then, so I get the grill up to about 400 degrees. I put them on there, and then about every 7 minutes, I give the ear of corn like a one-third of a turn. One third of a turn every 7 minutes. And that way, you know, it cooks all the way around the kernel. I like it. Sometimes I'll leave it a little longer because I'm one of those crazy people that likes the corn a little burnt. You know what I mean?
That sounds good too.
But seven minutes and it'll be done. 7 minutes per third and it'll definitely be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Love these ideas. Thank you very much, Pam.
<Love you too. laughs>
I am going to have such an fun afternoon today trying all this. Peter, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, how's it going? Just a quickie to add to the discussion. So you mentioned that you just like to use a little salt and butter.
Yeah.
Try garlic salt.
Oh, what a good idea.
It's amazing.
Garlic salt. Yeah, I've had it where people put mayonnaise on it and cheeses, and that's too much. I want to taste the corn. But garlic salt.
Yep, it's amazing. We found it by accident, and then we do it now every time.
Peter, you've just changed my life.
That's all I was hoping to do.
I appreciate your call.